Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. On this episode of the podcast, I speak with Denise Schiffman, who discovered the power of group therapy after experiencing chronic anxiety when she was an executive at multi-billion dollar companies where her hectic lifestyle was starting to catch up with her. Having grown up believing that only weak people went to counseling, she realized that therapy, and in particular group therapy, can be a key element in someone's overall health. That's why she's now developing a means for professionals and therapy seekers to find groups that work for them through an online, data-driven platform called GroupWell. She believes that a virtual way for people to connect, but also experience well-constructed and well-run group therapy is an idea whose time has come, especially now that healthcare is embracing more online tools to deliver care. Critical to GroupWell's success will be combining the age-old need for connection with technology innovation. Launching this product poses many challenges, but it's a project that she believes meets a great need at a time when people are feeling more isolated than ever. Now, I agree with her, since I've had my fair share of challenges with grief and loss, and therapy has helped me navigate it. What Denise is doing is sorely needed and will only become more relevant as COVID-19 continues. Now, let's get better together. Denise Schiffman, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jari. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and you know, what's really cool about what you're working on right now, which is called GroupWell, which of course I'm going to tease a little bit. We'll get to that a little later on. It's kind of near and dear to my heart in terms of healthcare. But the thing that's really cool is that we met through Founders Network once again. But I was your like onboarding mentor, which is a really cool way to get to know someone because usually they come into a new group. It's sort of like, hey, how who are you and how do I use this Founders Network thing? And I would love to hear your journey, and I know everyone else would too, because you've led a very fascinating life up to this point. And you know, when we talk about what you're working on now, I mean, you're literally just at the start of it, which is always a really exciting thing to talk about and think about. So, before we do that, so how did you get to do what you're doing today?
So it's a great question. And I don't come from the healthcare industry predominantly. I spend a little bit of time in it, but this is a big change up for me. And GroupWell is a data-driven behavioral telehealth platform specifically designed for group therapy. And I came to it in a surprising way, I guess, surprising for me. I've had big, you know, executive jobs in high-tech companies, and you know, you're usually running at 100 miles an hour and traveling around the world and booked from 7 a.m. to 8 o'clock at night. And that's all good. And I loved it and I thrived on it. But I decided after my last big job to take a year off. And this was about 3 years ago. And out of the clear blue sky, I started to be challenged by chronic anxiety attacks. And it literally took over my body and it took over my life. And I would just stand up in the middle of the living room, Jari, and look around and think, what the heck is happening to me? Wow. And I did all the things most of us do. I got on Google and started searching, and I downloaded Headspace and started trying to meditate, which has never been my strength. Sitting still and not thinking is, you know, and I like Headspace's approach, you know, the mindfulness CBT side of it is really powerful, actually. I read books, actually, listened to a lot of books on Audible, and was trying to teach myself what I needed to know, because I've always been so resilient from a behavioral health perspective. I've always had a way to kind of wake up the next morning and feel great. That was sort of my skill, and it had gone away. And so I was trying to figure out what new skills did I need to build. And it was what I learned on my journey was that being in that state isolated me. The last thing I wanted was anybody I knew to know what I was going through. Certainly, honestly, for women in the workplace, you don't talk about having anxiety. You just don't.
Well, as a man, you don't talk about that either.
Well, you know, this is true. So we don't talk about our health very much, our mental health in the workplace.
No.
But it, you know, so it wasn't a conversation I was going to sort of bring forward, and that isolated me even more, which of course makes the mental health challenge significantly worse. And so my process was to learn to reach out and connect with other people, that shared experience and the mutual support. And almost by accident, it happened with this tribe I'm a part of, this very small group of executive women who one evening after a meeting, we were chatting and I just let it out. I couldn't keep it in anymore. It's just at rock bottom. And what I got, because they were, you know, some of them were medical professionals and really knew how to handle the situation. And many of them had been in therapy and had the shared experience. And I got sort of that full sense of what it's like to be part of a group that you're connected to, that you can trust and rely on, that you know, shares your experience so you don't feel so alone. And then where you can help other people and they can help you, which is part of your growth and your building the strength, and not only to get healthy, but to stay healthy. And I learned that that's the power of group therapy. And that got me on this path. That started 3 years ago. And then it took me 3 years almost to start the company. And figure out, you know, how it made sense to go after this space.
Whoa. I mean, wow. Talk about finding a personal need and filling it, which a lot of us do, you know, as entrepreneurs. You sort of scratch your own itch, I guess, is what they say. but what's interesting is, so I've done a lot of personal therapy over the last 3 years to kind of work through some of the challenges I had when my wife Jane died, and it has been a transformative experience for me personally, the one-on-one therapy, because, you know, you can kind of work stuff out. But I've never tried group therapy before. I guess the group therapy, the pseudo group therapy that I would do before everything got shut down was I would do jujitsu and, you know, with a bunch of guys and sometimes some gals, you know, like beating each other up and choking each other out, which is this not only physical, but, you know, the exercise, the getting your body to release all that tension. I am so curious as to how the transition's been from like executive, like, I mean, you were pretty high up in some of these companies, I'm assuming. I don't remember how, if you could tell, how high were you up in these companies?
So I was the senior VP, you know, over multi-billion dollar businesses.
Wow. So a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure.
Yeah. A lot of pressure. A lot of stress.
A lot of stress.
A lot of anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. So no wonder why. But so how has the transition been from that kind of corporate life into now, you know, with Groupwell? I mean, you're literally in the process right now of starting it, getting all of your team together, trying to raise money. How's that transition been?
Well, there's two pieces to the transition, Jari. The first and the most powerful has been, no matter who I talk to, whether it's my new mentor at Founders Network or my accountant or a friend of mine I haven't seen in a long time, when they ask me what I'm working on now and I share it with them, I get these stories, these life stories that I never would have known about them. And I am surprised every day by how many people will say to me, I've been looking for a group for 10 years or 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And I've never been able to find a, you know, a bipolar group or a group for, one example is a woman like me, not personally me, like that person who's a scientist, but struggles with some very severe challenges. Mm-hmm. And that's a different model than someone who doesn't already have the technical understanding of what's going on, but right, still needs to solve the problem. And so that's been huge for me. And it's taught me that I'm in the right place at the right time, because this is where I want to be. I've built a lot of technical products in my life, for data center backend infrastructure. I really want to build something that impacts human beings and living their lives every day. So that was really important. On the other side of it is, well, going from big company job to a startup, I've actually worked in a number of startups, and I actually transitioned to a startup before I started this one. So I had that experience, but this is the first time I started with a blank sheet of paper and really created the company myself and reached out for all the partnerships and the advisors. And I had already learned how important those connections are in my personal life. Well, it turns out to be they're really important in your professional life too. And I've built these amazing relationships with people who have dug in on a company that I literally created out of my mind and some experience,
right,
and wrote down on a piece of paper. And of course it has morphed dramatically, over and over and over as I learn from the experts. And to be able to build a partnership with the Association of Group Psychotherapists, the preeminent association in the US that's also connected to an international organization, just because I'm hitting it is such an underserved or unserved need. There's really no one going after this space. And, you know, the first thing I heard was, oh my God, someone's building something for us, meaning us, the group therapists.
Right.
And these amazing advisors that I have who really believe in delivering group as a way to scale therapy and the challenge we have today where we don't have enough therapists. We can talk more about that.
Yeah.
But so I've been motivated by the need every day to kind of work through all these details. And of course, the big thing is raising venture capital. And it's just a big learning curve. And I like to learn. I love pushing myself to do something I haven't done before. And so for that, it's great every day, but I am shocked at how much learning there is single day.
It's a fire hose. It's sipping from a fire hose that's being shot out of a cannon.
It really is.
It's insane. I mean, and raising money is just it's just a different experience. I mean, you know, a lot of people write about it that it's like, oh, it's just a B2B sales process, but you know, it is in one sense, but then in another sense, it's all about those relationships. It literally comes down to, you know, do I trust you with my money? And it's just one of those things that takes a long time to do. And it is kind of interesting that a lot of the group therapists, the reaction that they have, that someone's actually finally going to build a tool for them. You know, there's a lot of individual therapy tools. There's like Mindspace is for a meditation. There's the the Waking Up app. There's lots of these different apps for the individual themselves to sort of work on their own little thing. But when it comes to the dynamics of a group, which is always tricky, like I remember there's a bunch of grief groups I tried. I tried to figure out if like grief group therapy was for me, right? And so I went to a bunch of them. And the thing that it was really hard on me to do is, one, I was pretty much the only man there and the only man my age. Because, you know, I'm like, when Jane died, I was 46 and she was 36. So I'm like not the typical widower, so to speak. But it was mostly women, not a lot of men. My experience with it, especially on the grief side, was that it was a lot of pity party, private pity party stuff, which I felt, but I just did not want to be part of. I wanted to figure out how to work through it and like how do I grow from this? Because, you know, one of the things that Jane was adamant about before she passed away was like, I want you to be happy. I know you're going to go down the spiral of doom on this if I go, because that's the way you are. But you need to promise me that you're going to be happy for literally the rest of your life, right? I mean, that's the promise I made to her, which I try every day to do. But the therapy part of it, the group therapy part of it was just, it just was such a Debbie Downer, you know, like, gosh, can we stop talking about how, you know, how sad we are? I mean, I understand we have to talk about that, but like, can we talk about how we're going to work through it? And being in a lot of cases, being the only man was really hard because, I mean, not to say no one knew what I was going through, but no one knew what I was going through. Like everyone has a different, you know, dynamic with it. But for men in grief, especially men in grief and the loss of a spouse or the loss of a child or whatever, we handle it differently. And there's a different dynamic to it. So I'm curious, how do you think Group Well is going to handle that sort of dynamic? Because that's a big challenge, just full, you know, full stop.
I'm sorry. You know, first and foremost, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Loss of Jane.
Yeah.
I know how hard that's been for you. And the dynamic you're describing is exactly the reason why I created Group Well the way that I did. So a lot of telehealth, as you were getting at, is individual telehealth. So you have these on-demand telehealth platforms where there, you know, you get on, you need a therapist or a counselor or a coach, and you're connected to somebody. You don't really get a lot of decision in that. You can evaluate them and you can decide no, but then you get connected to somebody else and you start again, which is not terrible. But, you know, and most of that is in asynchronous texting. And it still actually can come out fairly expensive. What I decided to do is to stick to my knitting. What I do is technology. So I'm building a technology platform that scales with therapy and group therapists, the therapists themselves, whether psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, even clergy, nurses. There are nurses that specialize in this area. There's a wide range of people that provide group therapy and know how to do it well. And one thing about groups, whether they're peer groups or support groups or therapeutic intervention groups, the moderator who's running that group really needs to know what they're doing and needs to be assessing the outcomes of every person every week. How was that group working for you? What would you change in that group? And also validating, you know, that someone is getting better or not. And that's one of the reasons why I built something that's data-driven. One, because once we're all on video and on online, I should just say, we get a lot of data. We get audio, so tone, pitch, speed, repetition, word count. We get all of that that can be analyzed to determine how you are doing. Same with some of the video cues. And then you have online surveys. We can be very consistent about asking you how you're doing and asking a certain set of questions that get at a group score. So how is the group progressing? And then how are you progressing? And then ask you if there's something you change. And it's something that we've been lax about in physical groups when you show up to a group meeting. But I want to kind of come back to the original reason and my original thinking around GroupWell was to be able to build it as a marketplace, a two-sided network where both the therapist and the consumer are on the same platform, which creates synergy, but so that any therapist can get on the platform quickly and offer groups, so that we can scale the number and type of groups massively, which would make it much easier for consumers who are looking for a particular type of group to find it. And I, in the story you told me, the story you just told all of us, I've heard many times from other people. I haven't been able to find the group that I've been looking for. And so what we want to do is make sure that people can search and find a grief group of men, or, you know, a culturally specific group or a culturally specific moderator, because that might be very important to you. For what you're challenged by or the circumstances that you live in. So scale matters, the ability to access the platform, to use it automatically, very easily matters. And then putting the data behind it to make sure the right things are happening so your experience is a good experience.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see how the data aspect of it is sorely missing in a, you know, a physical group. It's such a challenge. You know, I mean, I think everyone at some point in their life should go through a therapeutic process to kind of process the stuff in their world, right? You don't need to do it like I do every week and all that, but there is something to be said for the process of reflection and being around people that actually have your best interest at heart, which some people say, oh, is friends and family, but, you know, that's true, but there's not a place that you can kind of vent about friends and family, which sometimes you have to do, right? Even the best partner, you're like, ah, sometimes, you know. And I do find it fascinating that you're trying to enable that, like, just a better way to do it. Because I used to belong to the, you've heard of Plan B from Sheryl Sandberg?
Yes.
Yeah, so she wrote the book Plan B after her husband tragically died. I joined that. They had a private Facebook group for that. This was early on. And what was nice about that is that clearly there was a group of people that were grieving and they had different types of grief. And everyone has their own journey with it. But the thing that just made it overwhelming and I had to leave was it wasn't really... weren't matched right, you know? There were clearly people that were dominating the conversations. Like most, you know how most groups, it's like, oh, 20% of the people like do 80% of the comments and the rest of the people kind of lurk, right? And without a moderator, and I'm glad that you brought this up because the moderator, if there was a kind of a better moderating mechanism, it would kind of draw out the people that are just sort of lurking, right? Because as we all know, we've all been in social situations where people just sort of, there's some people that just dominate it and groups have that domination problem where someone's going to talk the whole time about their private pity party and woe is me. And like, you know, they will suck the air and the time out of everything. And the feedback mechanism on that without a good trained moderator is miserable. And I think that's part of why I just didn't work for me. A lot of these groups didn't work for me because they weren't moderated by a professional. They were, oh, we're going to get together because we all lost someone we loved and we're going to have, you know, I did this one where it was like dinner party, but it was focused on like younger people, but I still did it anyway. And it was cool and interesting, but again, we were all at kind of different stages of it. And I know how important it is for a professional to understand that. And so how do the professionals that you've talked to, how are they planning on using the data and the platform and to kind of like help out those those folks that may need a little more encouragement to share?
Well, so this is interesting. So therapists aren't used to having tracking data or not just on themselves, but on their clients, their patients. And a therapist will tell you, look, if a primary care doctor needs to know how their diabetic patient is doing, they run a test that's covered by insurance. If a therapist wants to see how their therapy patient is doing, they have to go out and pay out of their own pocket to get a test, you know, an outside service to, wow, to track that patient through basically standardized surveys, PHQ-9, mm-hmm, GAD-7, you know, associated with different mental health disorders. And so we need to change the model. And once we move our line, we're getting all the data. We can analyze that and provide that data to really help a therapist understand their dropout rate, their deterioration rate. So really interesting data point. The top 20% of therapists have a 12% dropout rate and a 5% deterioration rate. Dropout meaning people who leave their practice, and deterioration meaning the patient's doing worse. The bottom 20% have 4 times the dropout rate and 3 times the deterioration rate. Wow. And 90% of therapists think they're in the top 20%.
Well, that's like, you know, I would say same thing with entrepreneurs, right? We're within, yeah, the top. Of course I'm in the top 10% of all entrepreneurs. Of course.
Yeah. Of course I'm going to be the next billion, you know, the next unicorn. Absolutely. Yeah, whatever. I mean, I can do that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Interesting. Data's helpful, right?
Yeah.
And so it's helpful to them. Now, some therapists on their own have always surveyed their group, sent them an email after a physical meeting, you know, everyone's together, and asked them, give me some insight to how this is going. Others don't do it. They don't think of doing it, or they don't think it's necessary. They think their clinical gut is good. They've got lots of experience and they know what's going on. I think underlying data will really help people see patients are doing better, they're doing worse, the group is doing better, the group is not feeling cohesion, they're not, you know, got that climate. And so there's 4 aspects to analyzing a group. It is the cohesion, it's the climate, it's the therapeutic alliance with the therapist, and it's empathy. And so those are the things that we're evaluating, how that group is progressing. But people, you know, who are motivated to provide higher quality care, which is the most, you know, the highest percentage of therapists, are motivated to get that data. They want it. They don't want to have to pay out of pocket themselves extra money above and beyond. And if their organization doesn't do it, whether that's their hospital or their clinic, they really don't have much of a choice today. So it's really moving us forward. And with COVID-19 driving almost all of therapy, 83% of their behavioral health now is online. Everyone's starting to think about it differently. Now, how do we get from just digitizing a medical office, which was the first, 20 years of telehealth, to really advancing,
yeah,
health and proactive health? And I really think of this as a lifetime relationship, to group well, to as you were mentioning it, to therapy, but to your own behavioral health, everything from therapeutic intervention with a therapist, someone who's licensed or a medical person who's licensed, to support groups, which might be more loosely managed, to wellness groups, which are certified coaches. In all cases, the person moderating is certified, licensed in some way, because I believe in that model based on everything you just said and what I've learned. You know, our experience with forums and anonymous groups, anonymity is not a good thing
in
on the web. It's
not
just not a good thing.
Not at all.
It generally deteriorates. There are lots of peer-to-peer startups trying to do chat peer-to-peer, some not really video, but chat and texting. And you know, once again, anonymous.
Yeah.
And anonymous misses the entire point that we need people, that we have an epidemic of loneliness and isolation that just got exacerbated again by COVID-19. We had it before in the US.
Yeah.
It's gotten much worse.
Yeah. It's awful.
And that so this whole anonymous thing completely misses the value of connections in your life. And if you don't have them, if you're more introverted or you have social anxiety or you have chronic disease, which can also isolate you, You have got, that's one of your first steps, is making real connections to other human beings. And of course, the perfect situation is face to face, but we're not going to be face to face again for a long time. And realistically, online just makes it easier. You know, before we were taking therapy online for group therapy, the biggest frustration was no shows, people showing up late. I mean, how do you have a cohesive group if everybody's showing up at a different time because of traffic or because the babysitter was late or whatever it is?
Yeah, totally.
The biggest excitement for therapists is, wow, everybody's here and everybody, you know, dials in at pretty much the same time. So that's all very good. But I really think, to the point that you're making, and one of the relationships that I have with the Association of Group Psychotherapists really is about training therapists to become certified group psychotherapists to make sure you have the training to run group well. The last thing we want is to be driving a larger volume of group therapy by people who don't know how to run groups well. And so that's why I've stayed away from the peer-to-peer model and really focused on the licensed professional, you know, led model.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a good, wise way to go. I mean, if you can crack that nut, that I think is one of the most important things to sort of sort out nowadays. I mean, it's just so funny how trends accelerate during a pandemic. Because, you know, I mean, we've all seen sort of the telehealth, which I just don't like the name. I think it's a bad name, but I didn't pick it. So that's, you know, if you ask me, if I ruled the world, it wouldn't be called telehealth. I don't know what you'd call it, but I just don't like that name. It seems like 1930s, 1950s. But you see the absolute acceleration of all of this healthcare stuff going digital. And, you know, because everyone's like, oh, well, it's so hard to do with HIPAA and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, like, no one can go anywhere. And then it's like, well, I guess you should figure it out, shouldn't you? You know? And you see that with even with visiting your doctor, like, you know, mm-hmm. Now you can do that all online, which again, doesn't necessarily replace the in-person. But talk about, like what you said, economies of scale and being able to get the therapy to the people who need it. Because I do think, and I agree with you, people are going to need way more of this therapy to help them through the challenges and struggles that all of this isolation and loneliness that's only been accelerating even more. Because, you know, in America, we've been more and more alone over the last decade. And depending on your age, it's even worse. Gets really awful. And we do need connection to other humans. Like, that's, we're primates. That's, yeah. That's sort of the way.
We need our tribe.
We need our tribe.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you and I, our ancestors, got us here, right? It's,
yeah.
You know, we told better stories. We had a tribe that told us where the food was and which place to avoid so we didn't get eaten by the saber-toothed tiger. That's sort of our jam. So what has been, how's your kind of daily schedule like then? I mean, kind of been working on this for a couple of years. How do you manage your day to kind of move things forward, especially now during the pandemic?
Oh, I'm doing like 100 different things. I mean, that's the interesting part of being at this stage. I've got to go raise money. So I'm spending a lot of time with investors, and that's been going really well. I've got to get the product built. So I've got a great user design team, and we're getting prepared to go out for user testing. We've got an interactive proof of concept done that looks amazing. And so I'm getting, starting to get people signed up to do that and still working on the product every day. And then I'm also doing a lot of research every day to make sure I am covering all the categories of, you know, how are we going to do the analytics? What are the pieces that underpin it? And then I'm also hiring. So I've just brought on a chief clinical officer who is amazing, she's bilingual. She's originally from Argentina. She's, been doing group therapy and is passionate about group therapy, but she's been doing it for underserved communities for many years. And I think that's really a big part of the model that I am targeting is, you know, global access to quality care. And that means access by anyone. And you know, that's a lot of work in the U.S. because of our very convoluted healthcare system and reimbursement system. Whether you're on Medicaid, Medi-Cal, you know, private insurance, or you have no insurance at all, or you prefer to pay cash up front anyway because you don't want a medical record that you're seeking healthcare or behavioral healthcare. I mean, there's just, you've got to be able to cover the entire gambit. But in a big, and you kind of said it a couple times during this conversation, is we have a huge, huge problem with behavioral health in the U.S. We think of it as an afterthought to any kind of healthcare. We don't yet understand as a healthcare system how much mental health care impacts your physical health care and how much your physical health impacts your mental health. Oh, these things are intimately tied together. And the data in the US, CDC says that 50% of Americans will have a mental health disorder at some point in their lifetime. The WHO basically says 1 billion people globally will have a mental health disorder at some point in their lifetime. And we don't have nearly enough therapists in the US or globally to serve this kind of demand. And then COVID made it much more difficult. And one of the objectives of providing group and really expanding the ability, I mean, I think once we take care of all the complexity of putting groups together and, you know, creating retention and managing that group and, you know, that whole process of intake, we'll have a lot more therapists that will offer group and group therapists that will offer more groups, which really gets that scale because group is so much more efficient. A single therapist to 5 or 10 people instead of to one. I mean, it's significantly more efficient and it's 2 to 5 times less expensive per person. Session.
Oh, yeah.
And so the healthcare system can solve for that. That's what payers are looking for. They're looking for cost-effective ways to reach a greater percentage of their membership with quality care. They do actually care that the quality of the care is good, and they're looking at different kinds of reimbursement models, like value-based models, to increase the quality of care. And so that's a big part of it. I mean, there's so many pieces to this. And so the, you know, that last part of it is really looking at the economics of what I'm trying to do, what's happening in the world today, not just in the US, and then how will we serve and do a good job of serving these underserved communities, which has its own set of complexities to it. I think Medicaid actually serves 25% of the behavioral health need in the U.S. I mean, they're just a big part of the opportunity for something like GroupWell.
Yeah.
So my job is really, it's so many things at the same time, you know, and I, of course, every time, as you know, every time you talk to an investor, they're asking you to think through one more thing. So you know, what's your marketing plan? So I wrote a marketing plan, you know, 6 months before I launched the product. So it's stuff like that. That keeps me extremely busy, but my key area really is build the product and, you know, hire, you know, I've already brought together a great core team, but continue to hire a really strong core team and then raise money.
Yeah. Raising money, never fun, but yeah, you're right. It's always one more thing. Always one more thing. I mean, and there's always one more thing and there always will be one more thing, I think. You know, you're going to find, you know, all sorts of things that, of course, you didn't know today that you're going to know in 6 months because you're building and you're asking people. And that's a really good, you know, that's just the way this world works, right? You can't, you never know a priori what's going to work. Just you don't. You have a good idea and you go figure it out. And I think that's really fascinating, kind of just the thing that I've always found about therapy and mental health in general in the U.S. for whatever reason, and I'm not sure why this is the case. I don't know if this is the case worldwide. Maybe you know. The stigma behind it's pretty high, and I mean, I'll be the first to admit. Before I'd started doing therapy, I felt the same way. It's like, why do I need this? Like, I don't really need this. I've got friends or family to talk to. Why I can handle it, you know, and especially as a man, men are even worse. even if you like, you know, identify as a man, like whoever you identify, like men are worse at this for whatever reason. A lot of it's cultural. A lot of it's just expectations. I think one of the best ways it was put to me is that it's okay for a woman to cry, but not to get angry. And it's okay for a man to get angry, but not to cry. And that's bad because we're humans, we're emotional. We have to let that out. And part of even the problem I had was when I wasn't letting those emotions out, physically would feel bad. Like, why am I so tired? Why do I want to drink to drown all these feelings? Why do I have to smoke more pot to go to sleep? Why is my mind racing? I mean, it's like, and so you look at all this abuse and chemical abuse, substance abuse, overeating. I mean, all of these things, which, you know, the U.S., you know, a lot of overweight folk, a lot of diabetics, a lot of people addicted to Oxycontin and fentanyl, a lot of people addicted to drugs. I mean, all these things are all behavioral challenges that normally, if you just look at the broad spectrum of people, like I'm totally generalizing, but I'm pretty sure the data matches this. It has to do with loneliness, has to do with our disconnection from other people. It has to do with our not being supported, not having a tribe, which is what we evolved to have, that has our back. It's a powerful thing that for whatever reason, no one wants to talk about or no one wants to help. Have you been finding that? I mean, I know the people that you talk to and of course in the industry are like, yeah, of course I need this, but how has it been talking to people like investors about this? Do they see the need?
Well, it's mixed, but let me first say that crying is bar none the best release of stress, and I highly recommend it.
I do too.
Just lets it all out, and then it's gone, and you feel so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to cry a lot more. Yeah. Especially when I would give a speech or go up in front of a group of people. I talk about Jane, and I'd get really emotional, and I'd be like, take a deep breath. Okay, I'm glad that's over. Next, you know. And it was interesting because, like, seeing a man cry, like, people, they don't know what to say about it. And it's not like I'm blubbering and I'm like in a complete heap mess. I'm like sharing a genuine emotion that I feel at the time, and you feel it well up in your stomach through your chest, and you just can't help it. I mean, I couldn't help it, but like, why? Yeah. So I'm sorry, I digress, yeah. But so how has it been for you to talk about this with others?
So it's a little bit mixed. So most of the investors I talk to or have talked to so far are sensitive to the issue of behavioral health. If they don't invest in that area or invest much or know much about it, they find what I'm doing very interesting. They get the story. They love the fact that I'm an executive, that I have tons of experience, can easily pull off this company and pull a great team together. Lots of successes behind me. And, you know, it's all about the founder at this stage, so they are the founders. And so they get confidence there. They get that it's an underserved market, but they don't get the market itself. They really don't understand behavioral health. When I find investors that are in healthcare and in behavioral health, many of them have actually told me their stories, wow, their mental health challenges, because I always start by telling my story.
Yeah.
And I get really good reception and good support for telling my story. And it's amazing to me that there are investors now, both men and women, willing to share, you know, their own challenges or a challenge of a family member and how they relate to what I'm doing. And so that's very different than what I would have seen 10 or 20 years ago. I went into the odd investor who just thinks this, you know, why would anyone invest in this? Because they really are disconnected from their own self-awareness and the fact that people go to group. So I'll get asked like, why group? You know, after I've explained group, the, you know, effective efficacy studies that have been around for 50 years proving that it is as effective or more effective in many disorders than individual therapy. And they'll continue to ask me, why group? Why are you doing group? And so it's sort of if you go to therapy, you learn about therapy and so on. So it's a journey, but I'm, you know, more I talk to investors that know this space, they're so savvy, so knowledgeable, so interested. And even many are really excited about what I'm doing. And then it's about the stage. Do they invest pre-seed or pre-product or not? And, you know, all of them have said, come back. If they are a true institutional seed A investor, they'll say, just come back. You know, I really like what you're doing, but you gotta ship the product first.
Yeah. That's always hard.
Yeah, it's hard. It is hard, but it's, I understand how it's working today. And especially with COVID-19, everybody's a little more conservative.
Wow.
But you also, you know, you brought up stigma, and I really think that's a great conversation. The baby boomer generation and the older generation, their parents lived and spread the concept of stigma. They lived it because they were told it. So I was told, if you see a therapist, do not put it through your insurance. Your employer can never know. No one should ever know you're seeing a therapist. And I lived with that my entire life, thinking no one can ever know.
Yeah.
And then I started, you know, my realm of friends broadened to lots of people a decade younger than me who would say, you know, you should see a therapist. I haven't seen my therapist for 20 years. I'm like, and I'm thinking, you said that out loud.
Yeah, I know.
And an old boss of mine in a big staff meeting made the comment. He goes, you know, everyone should have a therapist. I love my therapist. And I thought, oh my God, he said that out loud at work. You know, so it's been a learning curve for me.
Yeah.
That if you don't talk about it, that's the stigma. And that what we need, and I'm hearing so, you know, it's so great to see celebrities, as much as we don't want to make them the icon, but celebrities have these huge platforms of 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 million people listening to them. When they come out and say, I have this challenge and I see a therapist, that's so powerful. And I also want, and it's another reason why I wanted to use the marketplace approach, so that everybody who gets in can see these just thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of groups going on, and everybody's showing up in video together, seeing each other. You are seen on video, and I am seen on video. And I am a person and I exist in the world and all of that that's so necessary. But, you know, we've got to make it where we're all telling our stories. And that's the power of removing the stigma. And I had the same, you know, feeling you did. I didn't want to look weak. I didn't want to look like I needed help. Like I couldn't do this myself. And, you know, it's always been at the push of other people. You really should see a therapist, where I tried several until I found an amazing therapist who has had a huge impact on my life.
Yeah, that's true. We got to talk more about it and reduce the stigma. So I think that's a great place to end it. Denise, I really appreciate your time. Good luck with Group Well. Doing great work. Sorely needed. And hopefully I'll have you back on when you're, you know, raised a bunch of money, built a great product, and you're, you know, like changing the way we do group therapy.
I love that. I'm happy to come back anytime, Jari. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur and, frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.